During today's edition of Come Receive the Light, we're continuing our monthly theme of violence, taking a look this week at the perpetrators and how their lives can be changed.
And I was a chaplain for almost 26 years, and early on, I just determined in my own heart that I would trust everyone. I mean, that might sound crazy to those who haven't worked in that environment, but I would trust everyone until they gave me a reason to not trust them.
Father Jim Powley will talk with our host, Father Chris, in just a few minutes about his ministry and outreach to an often forgotten segment of our society. We'll also get an update on a very interesting and fatiguing fundraising effort taking place this summer.
We had a record number of flats on the second day, I think about four or five, because of the rain. And so the first 2 days were a real triumph, I think. You know, we got through an awful lot.
And as always, it is so nice to have you tuned in, joining us for another edition of Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. I'm Mike Trout, and our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, and he has two fascinating conversations just ahead, both of which he recorded while out of the studio, connecting with the guests via Skype. And so there's just a little bit of a difference in the audio quality, but we certainly wanted to bring these discussions to you, one of which is very timely.
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle.
Well, if you're really sharp, you guessed it. Our first guest is on a bike, traveling across the United States. Here's Father Chris.
We welcome to the program today Jim Angelus. He's on a special task. Many supporters of a cause would host a dinner, a walkathon, or a concert to raise awareness and funds. But Jim is actually bicycling across the United States on behalf of the IOCC, International Orthodox Christian Charities. Tell us, Jim, what's going on. I know you're a couple of days into the ride at this point.
Well, that's right. We're 4 days into the ride. We find ourselves in Sandpoint, Idaho. We finished today, and tomorrow it's off to Libby, Montana.
And how many miles do you figure you've covered thus far?
I'd say we've covered just under 400 miles.
Well, this isn't the first coast-to-coast ride you've made on behalf of IOCC. Let me ask you the obvious question. What motivates you to do this a second time, 10 years after the first ride? And how will this ride differ?
Our first ride was really a hallmark ride because it was IOCC's 10th year anniversary. They were really looking to have a highlighted event for that time, and they were looking really to raise awareness. They had only been around for 10 years and accomplished quite a lot, so it was really an awareness mission and, of course, a fundraising mission.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, we went from east to west, and we covered the mid-portion of the country going through Colorado, Nevada, Utah, California. This time, we decided to cover the northern tier. And so we'll cover about the same number of miles as we did back then, and hopefully make as many stops along the way at San Orthodox parishes as well.
And this total, the total ride, the total amount of miles is how much?
The total amount of miles is around 3,200.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll float up or down.
And that's going to be covered over how many days?
37.
37 days, all right. And you're not on your own here. You must be riding with someone. You've got to have backup support and everything. Tell us about that.
Oh, no, of course. Of course. Well, we had 5 cyclists 10 years ago, and that required a significant crew. This time, there are 3 cyclists. Constantine Canellis came back for a second ride from the Netherlands. And we have a new rider with us this year, Brett McKee, who we're very fortunate to have because not only is he with us, but his father is really taking on the support and gear role all on his own, which is a huge task.
Mm-hmm.
We are really going to be maintaining our own bicycles and taking care of any mishaps. We did have quite a number of flats go going through Washington State, Stevens Pass, and into Cooley City due to the rain for the first few days.
Mm-hmm.
But Brett's father, Dan McKee, is really taking on the role of the lead vehicle, scoping out the route, determining if there's any need for a route change, maintaining food and beverages and all resources for the ride, and then, of course, taking care of logistics, such as checking into hotels and doing what it takes so that when we're done with the ride at the end of the day, we're using our time as efficiently as possible so that we could, you know, retire early and you know, get enough rest for the next day. So
give us an idea.
Three riders and one crew leader and lean and mean.
All right.
So far, so good.
Give us an idea of how much, how many hours per day. When do you rise? When do you take a break for the evening?
Well, we try to be up around 6:30, and be on the road by 7:30. That's a floating target.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it turns out to be 8:00. Sometimes a little sooner. It all depends upon how many miles we're covering in a day. Our first day was 108 miles, so we really had to make an early start.
Gotcha.
Today we covered about 55 miles, so we had the luxury of rising a little later.
Well, you started this, as we said, in the beginning of our conversation a few days ago. Any interesting stories in those first few days of riding?
Well, you know, we've had all sorts of... every day has a... We title every day in our blog... the first one was rain and 50 degrees. Like I said, we left Seattle. It was beautiful and sunny. And as soon as we got up to Stevens Pass, it started the team. And so we had a very, very, really cautious descent of about 30 miles to get into Leavenworth. We had a record number of flats on the second day, I think about 4 or 5 because of the rain. Unfortunately, you really can't see the road in any kind of particulate matter to avoid it. And so the first 2 days were a real triumph, I think. You know, we got through an awful lot. But fortunately, last couple of days, we've had some sun, we've had very nice temperatures, and we're taking this very graciously because we know this weather isn't going to last once we head into the plains.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the Orthodox Christian communities that you're going to be visiting along the way. What happens when you go to some of these pan-Orthodox parishes?
Well, we'll be going to parishes either midday or at the end of the ride. The IOCC, our contact there, has been looking at our route, and we really manage the route with the IOCC to make maximum use of getting to the parishes. Whether, you know, we're there at noon or in the evenings doesn't matter. We go there and, you know, our role is to talk to them about IOCC's pan-Orthodox approach to humanitarian aid around the world.
For people who would like to support you and IOCC by coming out to cheer you on and your teammates, how do they find out what towns you're going to be in, what you're going to be passing through? Give us the website.
Oh, that would be... Well, we certainly do look forward to people joining us on the route. 10 years ago, we must have had, I would say, 6 or 7 days where cyclists from communities came out and joined us for part or the entire day.
Tremendous.
The first website they should go to get details on the site itself is angelusfamily.us, and that would be my last name, spelled A-N-G-E-L-U-S, family.us. That will give them the route for the day, maps, hotels where we will be spending the evening. The other very important link is racetorespond.org. This is an IOCC link. This actually puts people on the IOCC website, but specifically on a page that will enable people to make an online donation to the IOCC through our Race to Respond effort this summer.
Tremendous, Jim. Thank you for joining us. We wish you God's blessings as you travel across the country and share the tremendous and powerful message of IOCC. God give you strength and, of course, protect you.
Thank you very much.
Well, when that conversation was recorded, Jim, as he said, was just 4 days into the ride. Now he's 14, 15, 16 days into the ride, depending upon when you're listening to this particular broadcast. He's still in Montana, no doubt, or maybe he's just moved in to South Dakota. I have a particular interest in this fundraising effort. I took a ride across the United States about 12, 13 years ago, and it is very challenging and very encouraging, especially when people come out and greet you and perhaps support the particular ministry you're attempting to raise funds for. Won't you go to that website? It's angelusfamily.us, A-N-G-E-L-U-S, family.us. And follow along on his route. And if you're anywhere near where he's going through, then track him down, wish him well, and consider contributing to the IOCC. That's angelusfamily.us. Well, our website here is myocn.net, and we're a nonprofit outreach. You can contribute certainly to us and become a part of this international ministry reaching around the world to Orthodox and non-Orthodox alike, hopefully inspiring you, changing your life, ministering to you, and encouraging you. You can contribute to us when you go to the website, myocn.net. There's a button right there in the top right-hand corner called Donate Now. That's myocn.net. And it's so important that we hear from you, especially during these long, hot summer months. And now with our feature conversation for this week, here again is our host, Father Chris, speaking with Father Stephen Powley, who for many years was a prison chaplain in the state of Colorado and now is with the Orthodox Christian Prison Ministry.
Having dealt with criminals, having visited myself many jails at different times during ministry, it can be a little bit nerve-wracking, even for pastors to go in there. I wonder if we can sort of jump into your heart a minute and see what you feel about your being in there. Were you ever fear for your own safety? What did it feel like being in these prisons, working with them?
You know, and since I did it day in and day out, and I often you know, just say, you know, God chose me for that ministry because he knew I was just too stupid to be afraid, I guess. But, you know, being in that environment and having, you know, bishops or priests come in to visit some of the men there, I can tell you their reaction was always just the feeling so much darkness, so much oppression. And there were times when I could feel that, but for the most part, I think the Lord did shield me from that and allowed me to carry on the ministry. But when others would come in on a one-time visit or just periodically, I think they would feel it even greater. Sometimes when you're in the midst of darkness, you don't sense it quite as much as perhaps you ought to be sensing it. Mm-hmm.
And how about relationships with the inmates? Of course, visiting them, talking with them. Some people would say, well, you know, you're going to go in there. There's no way that you can trust what they say. I mean, did your ministry within the prison system change the way you look at people?
Well, I was a chaplain for almost 26 years, and early on, I just determined in my own heart that I would trust everyone. I mean, that might sound crazy to those who haven't worked in that environment, but I would trust everyone until they gave me a reason to not trust them. Mm. And I would even tell the men that, you know, I will believe you, whatever you say to me, I will trust you. But if I ever find out you violated that, then don't ever expect it again. Mm-hmm. You know, I will treat you with that respect. But at the same time, if you fail to honor that, then it's going to be a tough road to ever get my trust again. And it seemed to work pretty well. There were times, I can tell you, and working in some of those places, I remember one day in particular, I was headed out of my office to go make rounds, And as I shut the door, I said, here we go again. I'm off to see some of these filthy animals. And I say that to my shame, Father. And I caught myself and I said, oh, my Lord, what did I just say? You know, and it was because some of the men were behaving like animals, you know. And I went back into my office and I called a friend of mine who was very knowledgeable of this sort of stuff. And we talked about it. And his counsel was right on the mark. He said, everyone who works in these environments will go through this. And he said, you'll come out on the other side because you do care. And he said, it's just, you know, the darkness sometimes overwhelms you. And that's what happened. But it did shake me for a minute. I thought, you know, maybe it's time for me to move on from this particular kind of ministry. But over time, I was able to once again look at all of these men. It doesn't matter how tarnished they might be, as made in the image and likeness of God, and that was a big help.
Well, we're not talking here about men that had fender benders. I mean,
definitely not. Yeah. Most of these men were spending the rest of their life in prison, so definitely not fender benders.
And what kind of crimes were they guilty of, or found guilty of?
Well, very violent. A lot of them were very violent crimes. You know, a lot of murder, or other kind of violence involved.
Did you feel or did you hear and see remorse? Or was it, like you said, they just went into a dark place and went into that just existence mode when they were in the jail for the rest of their lives?
Well, Father, what kept me going was seeing literally Christ transform lives. I saw men weep through their baptism as we baptized them into the Holy Orthodox faith. I saw men that were considered very violent and evil men begin to weep as I finished the prayers of exorcism and wept through their entire baptism as I lowered them into the waters. They were still weeping and wept afterwards. Mm-hmm. And their lives were transformed. I had, you know, the head of security come to me at one point and ask me, you know, what had happened in dealing with one individual. He said, this man has gone from being an absolute animal to an absolute angel. And he said, I mean that literally. And this man wasn't a person of faith. And I told, he said, what did you do to him, Jap? And I said, well, I didn't do anything. God did. And his response was, well, sure, Chaplain, sure. Whatever you did to him, go do it to the rest of these guys.
Of course.
But the truth of the matter was, I saw the power of God and the love of God for these men. God reached out in ways I never even dreamt of to touch the lives of some of these men and to draw them into his church.
Well, I was privileged to hear you speak at one of our clergy retreats at the Aquinia Center for the metropolis of Atlanta. And clearly, you have touched many lives through the grace of God. But I want to go to this point, which I think is connected very much to what we've just been talking about. The idea with prisons used to be they would go in there, the inmates would go in, and they would be rehabilitated. But most studies now show that once you're in the system, and it's very hard to stay out of it. Now, you were dealing with people who were in there for life, but I imagine at some point you came across those in your 26 years of experience that did get out. What can be done to assist this system, which for some seems to be completely broken?
I did work in all different security levels over my time, and so a lot of the men that I worked with did get out. The biggest thing in getting out, I think, and staying out is to be able to have a support system. I think, first of all, while they're in prison, to be able to, as I said, like with dealing with some of the men that came to the Orthodox faith, was to see that transformation spiritually go on. I equate it to, you know, you can take a man that's a drunkard, a wino, you know, living on the street, and you can take him and dress him up in a tuxedo and make him look really good, But a week later, you come back, and there's a well-dressed wino laying in the gutter because he hasn't been changed from within. And so I think that transformation really needs to take place inside, not simply... all these things are important, but things like education and you know, work skills and things, those are all important. But they're not the overriding factor of what needs to happen in terms of a changed life. But I think once they get out of prison, then there needs to be a support system for them. With Orthodox Christian Prison Ministry, whom I work with now, one of the programs we have is called the Lazarus Project. And it's called Lazarus Project because when Jesus rose Lazarus from the dead, the first thing he did was tell those standing around, you go and unbind him. Mm-hmm. And people today are coming out of prison bound up by the whole system, as you pointed out. And it's our calling as Orthodox Christians to go out and unbind these men, to be there to help them through reintegration. And it's a fantastic program that's available to communities. But the idea would be then that you begin to mentor a person on the inside and continue that mentorship on the outside. And again, it calls for a lot of trust, a lot of the entire church getting involved with this and being willing to have someone come out of prison and be a part of your spiritual community and your the community you live in as well.
Father Stephen, part of the problem, I think you could agree, is the issue of their essence, of who they are. We can change some of their practices, but we can't necessarily change how they make those decisions. Am I right or am I wrong?
Oh, you're right. We can help them to understand decision-making process and be able to think in a different manner, perhaps, when they are facing decisions. But a lot of that, again, takes that transformation of the inner person.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I think happens, and people say it's old-fashioned, it's cliche, but doggone it, it's the truth. What happens to a person is usually formed by the decisions made by their parents and how in which that person is brought up. And if they're brought up in a loving home, in a caring home, I would think probably more than 90% of them will turn out fairly decent, don't you think?
I would agree with you. I would agree with you that, you know, certainly your home environment, you know, a lot of the men, not all of them, but a lot of the men that I worked with over the years didn't have much of a relationship with their father at all. Mm-hmm. Some of them didn't even know who their father was, right. You know. So that was a pretty difficult thing for them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Father Stephen, tell us how we can further support this ministry.
Oh, we would love your support, you know, both prayer and financial as we try to reach out. Believe it or not, Father, and this may come as a total shock to a lot of your listeners, there are actually states still here in the United States that do not recognize the Eastern Orthodox faith as a legitimate religion. And so we're battling those sorts of things, in addition to just finding you know, laborers who are willing to go into the prisons to when we identify people as Orthodox or people who are very interested in Orthodoxy, to find groups of people that are willing to go in. You can go on the internet. Our website is OCPM, Orthodox Christian Prison Ministry. So it's theocpm.org, theocpm.org. There's tons of information, books, icons, all the things that we send out into prisons for free whenever we're asked. You can see those things, just articles about our whole organization and how you might become involved. There's many, many ways to get involved, and not everyone is made to go into prison. We recognize that, so... There's many ways you can get involved without actually having to go in inside a prison.
Father Stephen, thank you so much. Always a pleasure to speak with you. We wish you and, of course, everyone working with OCPM. God's blessings and strength as you go forward. Thank you, sir.
A blessing for me too, Father, and it's always a delight to hear your voice.
Thank you, my friend. Be well.
Any of the contact information that we've shared with you on today's broadcast, whether it's for Jim Angelus or for Stephen Pauley with the Orthodox Christian Prison Ministry, can also be found on our website at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. Thank you again for listening, spending this time with us this week. I hope you'll be back next week. And as always, I hope you'll share with your friends the fact that the Orthodox Christian Network is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and that this particular broadcast, Come Receive the Light, is on the air. I'm Mike Trout. Again, our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, and remember to always have faith in what you listen to.